If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
This is Dr. Rob Stahl, and welcome to What Should You Expect at Your Age? I decided to put together this program as an experiment to see whether radio could be an effective way to present important and practical information about geriatric health, and maybe even help a few listeners. I would like to start with a short story I often tell to my patients. A patient once came to me who was about to turn 100 years old. She had pain in her right knee. I asked her what she thought was wrong. "What do you expect at my age?" she demanded. "How is your left knee?" "Just fine, thank you," she replied. "Then why doesn't your left knee hurt? Isn't it the same age as your right?" Her face brightened and understood what I meant. "Think about it, I do. It reminds me there is always something that could be done to help, even in extreme old age." I have put together a list of what I feel people should expect as they age. You should expect to be listened to, valued, and respected. You should expect knowledgeable and compassionate health care. You should expect to be as pain-free as possible and to be given medications that will only make you feel better, not worse. You should expect never to be abandoned or forgotten. You should expect not to live a life of loneliness or depression. You should expect never to be the object of prejudice or abuse. You should expect to get the help you need to live life to the fullest. You should expect to live up to your potential and have hope for the future. And lastly, you should expect never to be taken advantage of, except for your talents, knowledge, and wisdom. At a recent windy day at the baseball field, I spoke to a fellow dad about whether he had thought about advanced directives. What do you think about old people, Rob?
I'll probably love myself one day.
You know, I think you probably will. At least I think you hope you probably will. If your life is worth living at that point.
Yeah, but as long as I'm capable.
So, what would you want if you couldn't recognize anyone and, let's say, had a stroke and you couldn't eat for yourself? What would you want?
Pull the plug.
Pull the plug?
Pull the plug.
Okay. Do you have a healthcare proxy in place?
No, I don't.
Are you, I'll do that Monday.
That's a good idea. Because as you know, or as you may or may not know, New York State requires us doctors to look to people that don't have their wishes written out. Or if there's someone that can attest to you that that's exactly what you would want. So if you want to get you a copy of that healthcare proxy form, I'll send it to you.
That'd be great. Fax it to me so I remember where my fax machine is.
All right, good talking to you. Have a good day. My discussion with fellow baseball dad, Rob, brought up important questions about advanced directives. The most important of these is having a healthcare proxy in place. A healthcare proxy is that person you choose to make decisions for you if you are no longer able to make them for yourself. Usually, this is a spouse, a trusted son or daughter, or a close friend. The person acting as your healthcare proxy needs to remember that it is not what they would do under a specific circumstance, but it is their knowledge of what you would have wanted under the current health situation. I am very pleased to present esteemed local actor Mr. Saul Elkin with Shakespeare's The Seven Ages of Man. Well, what brought us here, thank you so much for responding in the affirmative.
It's my pleasure.
To have a reading of Shakespeare's The Seven Ages of Man from As You Like It.
Sure.
I'll put it in front of you and let you go and do your thing.
Okay.
Okay.
Very quietly, no acting, you know.
That's fine. I'm sure your voice commands more attention than my voice would in the reading. And then I have two other selections that I'd like you to briefly read through.
Sure.
And see if you might be interested in reading those for the radio audience as well.
Sure. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man at his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. At first, the infant mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. and then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and shining morning face creeping like snail unwillingly to school, and then the lover sighing like furnace with a woeful ballad made to his mistress eyebrow, then a soldier full of strange oaths and bearded like the pard, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation even in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice, in fair round belly with good cape unlined, with eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances. And so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank, and his big manly voice turning again toward childish treble, pipes and whistles in his sound. Last scene of all that ends this strange, eventful history is second childishness and mere oblivion, sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything.
It's beautiful.
It is a beautiful speech.
Yeah. Thank you.
It comes also at an interesting moment in a romantic comedy, with some men sitting around a fire in a forest somewhere, and Jaques, who speaks it, I think it's just something Shakespeare wanted to say, because it's not necessarily relevant to the play. It's a little sidebar to the play. It was just Shakespeare talking to his audience about this subject of aging, our lives, and how our lives change as we go through.
He felt obligated to say it.
I guess
so. What do you think about how he characterizes the sixth and seventh stages compared to older people today?
Well, I think he does describe a sort of physical condition that does, into which people evolve, some people evolve, although... You know, we see older people who are robust and active, and I'm sure you do in your practice as well.
Certainly.
For a long time. I lived in Vermont for a while before I moved to Buffalo and had a 90-year-old neighbor, a woman who lived alone and mowed her lawn and shopped and drove a car. That's rare.
Well, not that rare.
Yeah.
It's more and more common. I think modern medicine certainly has had a lot to do with it, and prevention.
Right.
Antibiotics, that's been the main key to prolonging life.
My experience with my mother, who died when she was in her late 80s, and now with my mother-in-law, who's 90 and living with me, is that people at a certain age are aware of their own physical process. They sense the changes and respond to them. And in Shakespeare's retirement, which lasted only two or three years, I mean, he left London and went back to Stratford, and he was gone in 3 years. His son-in-law cared for him and documented that care in a book that he wrote.
I would love to see that. Now, I have a few surprises that you can or don't have to read if you don't want to.
All right.
Let's start with this one, and it's entitled The Golden Years. And that's right here, and it's anonymous. We don't know who wrote it.
The golden years have come at last. I cannot see, I cannot pee, I cannot chew, can't tie my shoe. My muscles lost their flex, sure can't have sex. My memory shrinks, my hearing stinks, no sense of smell, I look like hell. My body's drooping, got trouble pooping. The golden years have come at last. The golden years, ooh, what a blast.
And that's great. This is my last surprise reading.
Okay.
And if you like these, I'll find more for you, and we'll get together some other.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, this is a newsflash, so you have to read it as a newsflash.
Yeah. Okay. Seniors are the nation's leading carriers of AIDS. Hearing aids, Band-Aids, Rolaids, walking aids, medical aids, government aids, and most of all, monetary aids to their kids.
Dr. Elkin then turned the tables on me and asked me a question.
So, because so much of your life is taken up with dealing with old age and death, I suppose, what are your anxieties? Do you have anxiety?
Well, let me tell you, I'm hopeful in this sense that any of my patients that I've asked, are you afraid of dying? They've all said no. Just the fact that they say no in a truthful manner means to me that the fear of aging is a fear of youthful people.
Yeah.
And that as you get older, that fear dissipates.
I think that's true. I mean, I'm experiencing that. I mean, and I had, you know, the childish terrors that everybody has, and I have four children, and I've seen them experience these sort of nightmares and terrors about death. It does go away. It doesn't go completely away, but it dissipates.
In 1900, someone who made it to age 50 was expected to live 21 more years. In 1997, someone who made it to age 50 was expected to live 30 more years, to age 80. Someone who made it to 65 in 1900 had an expectation of 12 more years of life. In 1997, 18 more years of life.
Doctor, we do have a caller on the line.
Okay, this is Dr. Stahl.
Hello, Dr. Stahl?
Yes.
I would like some information pertaining to medication. If people are on Coumadin, what causes the welts that come on them, red welts and bloody noses?
Thank you very much. That's a very important question, and it's a very common thing for someone to be on Coumadin, which is the brand name for the drug Warfarin, W-A-R-F-A-R-I-N. That's an anticoagulant drug that's used mainly in three circumstances. One, atrial fibrillation, when the heartbeat is not beating regular. And also when you have a clot, usually in your leg. It is often used after orthopedic surgery to prevent clots from developing. Now, the welts that you described may very easily go along with the fact of the effect of the drug. If you bump yourself, your blood is less likely to clot immediately, and you might get a little bit of bleeding under your skin, and that resulting in a bruise. But the importance of the drug is that it greatly reduces your chance of having a stroke when you have atrial fibrillation.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I hope that helped. I want to go through what I call the geriatric clinical experience, something I do with students that come through the places I work, and I try to describe to them how to evaluate an older person and what are the key issues to look for. Living alone, having difficulty getting around, having difficulty getting to the store just to get food. And when I went through medical school, I was never really taught what the word disease actually meant. We try to cure what can be cured, and there are things that can be cured or treated with specific medications or surgeries, but there are also things that just need to be made a little bit better so someone can go on with their life. Just to give you an idea of what this caregiver handbook deals with, the topic headings are credits and permissions, of course, introduction, caring for the caregiver, personal care, nutrition, medical aspects of caregiving, emotional and intellectual well-being, legal and financial affairs, and then several appendices, one about examples of caregiver resources and additional reading. By the way, did you know what the length of time the average doctor listens when he or she first sees a patient? This was a study done many years ago. It probably has changed now. I would hope it has changed. 20 seconds. 20 seconds is how long a doctor used to listen, hopefully used to listen, before he cut off his patient and started asking questions. I think we need to ask the open-ended question, what can I do for you, and just sit back and take it all in. I'll see you next week. It's been a pleasure. I've had a great time, and I hope you got something out of this.
Years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine.